Welcome to the It's Going to Be Good podcast sponsored by Accru. This is the place where Jill and I talk about how we are growing as individuals and how we are building a firm in a way that is healthy and sustainable. There's always more to learn, and we want to share what we have learned and what we're still learning. Today, we're going to talk about what it looks like to make information more transferable across team members, which we like to call democratizing information. And in our last podcast, we talked a lot about creating a culture of that continuous learning and development. So this is a great next step of, cool, we're starting in that direction. Now, what do we do with what we're learning? What do we do with what we already know? If we're going to be excited to learn and generous with what we know, like how do we actually do that? So Jill, how do we actually do that?
Well, I think this comes up a lot when you have turnover of staff. Like we talked about this in an AM meeting 3 months ago, but now so-and-so is here. So how did they know that now? Like it just there, you'll notice through running a firm, like, oh, you got to create systems around this. So let's start with what we started with. I think when I joined, there was not a ton of standard process. It was a bit of the Wild West. Like you do you, you know, like, which is one of our values.
What are deadlines?
Yeah, what even are standards? What even are, well, no, there were standards, but it was mostly like, I'll pick up the slack if there is any. But I think a lot of people just did what they already knew, what they were comfortable with. And then you got a very varied result from different team members. So when I joined, we created a lot of standard process. And I will completely own that when I started, a long formal SOP was my MO. And it was great to have something. It was really, everyone said they wanted standard operating procedure. And it was like, great, I could totally do that. And then I over-engineered the crap out of those. And
no.
Nice. Thank you. Yes. It is actually what happened. And it didn't work. It was too extensive. It was too formal too. Like I, you know, in reflecting back on some of those documents, I'm like, ooh, I did not get the Accru voice back then.
We didn't have an Accru voice back then. It was just sort of my vibe kind of, and then whatever everyone else is doing. I mean, one of the things you brought in was us actually kind of clarifying what our voice was. Mm-hmm. So then in the absence of any sort of process, having formal process is better than none process.
It definitely was. Yeah. But then no one ever re-referenced it, like, or referenced it again.
There's
and
that.
Yeah. And I think we realized probably within a year of creating some of those processes, like we can tell you and you can look at it once, but if you never look at it again, is it effective? Probably not. No. Yeah. I think that was our starting point, was let's just create something. And it felt really smart to have SOPs and, you know, all that stuff.
It sounds very businessy.
Yeah, it's very businessy and like so smart and like, oh, are we doing it? Turns out we are doing it once and then never again.
We're doing something. We were doing a thing. I don't know that it is maybe what we were doing. No. We were doing something.
And we quickly learned that the best floss is the one that you'll use.
Yep.
that is a really good rule of thumb. You know, if you don't use floss, it doesn't matter what brand you bought. You got to use one that you'll use. So buy that one. Even if it's lemon flavored.
That's a shout out to my dentist, because I asked her like, oh, is there like, you know, what kind of floss is like the best? And that was her answer. It's the one you'll use.
Just
floss. You know, so if it's not functional, it doesn't matter how pretty it is. It doesn't matter how like extensive it is. It doesn't matter what that process or SOP or document or whatever it is. Like if no one uses it, it's not functional. So it's not helpful. So totally. We learned, oh, creating something is better than creating nothing, but creating something people will use is infinitely better than spending the time and effort to create something no one uses. And then you kind of feel a little bitter about it. You know, it's like, I put time and effort into this, people. And it's like, yeah, but like no one wanted or needed that.
Or you made it hard. Like,
or you made
you
it hard.
Did it, but you made it hard. Like,
yeah.
And so when would I even go back into that SOP to look at it? Like, you want to pay me to go through that document? You know, like it's those kinds of questions that I think people, you know, aren't necessarily asking, but are feeling. And so I think the best next step that we took was just reverse engineering some of that stuff, unengineering it. Like, okay, it's too extensive, but it exists. So maybe we make it more accessible. Maybe we make it simpler. Maybe we kind of take that and pare it down and remove some of the fluff from it of like the purpose of this. Like the purpose is clear. It's a standard operating procedure. Like
stakeholders. I think that's my favorite. The purpose of this is to ensure all stakeholders are properly informed. Yeah. It's just like, who is this for?
It is for someone way businessier than us.
There was no ish in any
no,
of
no
that.
Professional SOP. Ish. It was all professional. It was for a law firm, which yes, we are not.
Not exactly. No, but I think we also started with, okay, we don't have any process. We need some process. Like there's no guardrails on anything. So we need to actually give some structure. And that was a lot of the overwhelm that I felt is this all feels unwieldy. I don't really know where things are at. Like I'm having a hard time holding all this in my head and there's no other process outside of my head or maybe some checklists that have no due dates, you know, so there's
no one else has access to.
Right. Or, you know, that the information is siloed or that, you know, I'm responsible for reviewing everything. So then it just happens when it happens or, you know, there's too much chaos. And so we came in like we need structure and we created, you know, structure that wasn't exactly functional. So then we started going, what are the actual problems that we need to address? And like, what are the knowledge gaps that people continually talk about? You know, what are the frustrations that people go, well, I ask Anna and then she knows, so she tells me, but this is information I couldn't know unless I asked her. Like, how do we get that information out of my head, you know, or out of these silos into a place where people can actually access it, where it is functional, where it is usable. And I feel like the client docs might have been one of the first things that really started to democratize some of the information that some people know into a place where anyone who works on this client will know what anyone else who has worked on that client knows. And so I think that was a good starting point of like, here's a thing people are actually saying they want versus SOPs that like we think people want and need, but no one actually is necessarily asking for.
Well, and I think people were asking, but they didn't know exactly what format they wanted it in. So I just translated it to what I was familiar with, which made sense to me. But if it's not referenceable, if it's not easily accessible to the team, or if it's only accessible to certain personality types or certain like preferences of how they like to see information, it becomes really challenging to make that democratized because Right. Then it's really like it's still siloed to specific kinds of people. So yeah, I think even though I think like SOPs, like standard operating procedure was absolutely something that was requested initially, they didn't exactly know how they wanted it, which right. I think we quickly learned like how you share this kind of information makes as much of a difference almost as that you share it.
Right. I think they wanted standard process.
Yes.
I think it translated to standard operating procedure, but what we're really looking for is what's the standard process for creating a journal entry template for recording payroll, you know, or what's mm-hmm. the standard checklist for a monthly client? You know, like what they wanted standard process that was like the everyday kind of functional, not necessarily like the operating procedure manual that you would read through to know the thing. Like it was much more like, I want to know how to do this thing so I can do that for all of my clients. Mm-hmm. And it just, we weren't exactly speaking the same language and what they were looking for and then how we were going to deliver it.
Well, and truthfully, that what you're talking about, like standard process, has been years in the making. That could not have been done quickly, like at all, because it wasn't. I mean, we've done it as fast as I can imagine doing it, and it has taken us 3 years. I think it took us 3 years to really push through to everything that we do across most clients has a process to it that is accessible to the team. And that feels like a huge endeavor to take on as a firm owner, especially if it all lives in your head, because it's like, but when would I have time to do this? Yeah, it took a long time to transfer that knowledge.
Yeah. And I think it took a long time to realize like where the biggest pain points were and how to do it in a way that was sustainable. Because I think my initial assumption was that process must be created top down. Mm-hmm. It must be created by us, you know, and, you know, some of that is just, do other people have the skill set to create process? Do other people have the knowledge that's required to create process? Like, are they like good at it? You know, mm-hmm. like, and will they do it the way that I want? Cause initially I was like, I would rather just make it than give feedback about it. Mm-hmm. You know, now I would much rather give feedback about something you made, but you know, at the start it was like, oh, like if I'm going to have to tell them they did it bad, I'd rather just do it myself.
Yeah.
Totally. And I think that's relatable. I think a lot of people are probably starting from that vantage point. You'll get over mm-hmm. it, I promise. As you equip and empower your team, your preference will definitely change. You're like, no, I think you got it. Show me what you got at the end. I just give you some pointers, but like, you're going to be great. Mm-hmm. That is a long time coming as well.
Absolutely.
You know, so I assumed it needed to be us. So then some of that, you know, dictated the speed at which we could make some of the process and make some of the shifts. And if it's top-down created, then you have to go through the process of galvanizing the team to get on board with this new process. Or, you know, you create the process and it dies. And then you do that enough times and then your team just ignores you when you create a new process. You know, that's an easy way to burn people out. So it was slow going at first because it was, you know, trying to bring a sheriff into the Wild West town. You are not going to immediately end at law and order. It's going to be a process. So when do you feel like we started to make some actual traction with process? Like, when did it start to go from, I'm making SOPs that no one seems to appreciate, to like, I'm making things people are actually doing something with?
I think there are two inflection points in that process. The first one I see as actually oddly when we had someone step into that learning and development coordinator role, we had a plan for the first time of how we were going to tackle that. And part of how we were planning on tackling that was what you needed to create versus what other people could create. And so even just having a target that was more specific than just get all the information out of Anna's head like that, I think having a goal and a target and like a bit of a distribution of responsibility was step one in that. Now, we didn't get there by just that step. I think it actually happened when we started telling people early in their employment, if not at the beginning, and then people who already worked here, everyone is responsible for building process. And we just made it part of how we work, because that made it so that if something changed, or if something was unique to a specific client, or if something was something, you know, this person knows how to do because of their particular role or their particular set of clients, or, you know, they work with nonprofits and so they know how to do this thing, it made it so that it was obvious to everyone that they were responsible for creating process around that. And I think when we shifted from how do we make this process to this is a Loom video for most things, that was a huge game changer for us. And that happened pretty early, the idea for that, but actually executing on it through making that initial plan, having the distribution of responsibilities, and then really equipping and empowering and encouraging our team to start making progress on this was a massive, like, I don't know, gas pedal for us in terms of accomplishing that goal, because it was really awkward at first. A lot of our team was like, I don't do video. I don't want to do that. I'm not comfortable making videos. I'm not comfortable speaking on camera. I hate the sound of my voice. Like, these are things we've heard for years. And I think if we just say, okay, fine, you don't have to.
Which is what I did. Initially. Yeah. And like, that's okay. I'll just make the video. And then you move at the speed of how fast you can make the video, which is not very fast.
It's
if it's all you making the video.
Yeah. And when you wear as many hats as leadership at a small accounting firm tends to wear, it's going to take a minute for you to make progress, to even make a dent in that. And we had a few team members who were comfortable making videos and many who weren't. And we just said, this is a thing we're doing and this is why we're doing it. We're going to cast this vision. Here's the benefit. You get practice, you get reps, you get to, you know, you get to build a new skill and a new set of muscles to do this, which is great for you, even if it's uncomfortable. The other benefit is these will exist. So mm-hmm. not only will you get to build that muscle, but everyone else on your team who supports you will also be contributing to this repository of information. And then you won't have to reinvent every wheel that you come across. So it was really important for us to cast the vision, to get people comfortable with it. And then just to say, you just kind of have to start. Like, I know I say that kind of a lot in these episodes, but like, it really does start with you just taking the first step and saying, okay, like this is going to be awkward. I'm going to hate it. It's going to be a bad video the first time around. I'm going to actually do a test video, send it, get feedback, and make another one. I'm going to do it twice the first time. You know, things like that that just kind of built the resilience to doing the thing at all was a huge impact, I think, for making our team much more comfortable in creating these kinds of process videos in particular. And truthfully, you know, we learned a lot even in that, like we can create a whole long 20-minute Loom video about an entire process, but that's actually really hard to reference too. It's like a really long SOP. You know, you can't really go find what you're looking for very easily in a 20-minute video. Whereas if you take each step in a process and break it up, you're going to have an easier time. Plus it's easier to record. Plus you don't have to chop it up in the editing, you know, floor of mm-hmm. Loom. Like it's much simpler. So if you can make it manageable chunks to create, it's also manageable chunks to use. And so like just kind of building some awareness of like best practice for the team and for us even like in learning this and making it just normalized that we all contribute to making process was a huge impact for making real felt progress in this. And honestly, you don't have to have your camera on to make a great video. In fact, most of the time with a process video in particular, don't put your camera on. Like Loom will make those, like it'll highlight the place you're clicking and it'll do all the thing and the focus should be on the process. So turn your camera off, be in your PJs, I don't care. Like, it doesn't matter that your hair's done or not. Like what matters is that you are clear about what needs to happen and that you're able to make a plan to start and kind of have an outline of what you want to cover, have everything ready to go, and then just chunk it out and you know, don't bite off more than you can chew because it's a new muscle and it's hard to build initially, but the more you do it, the easier it gets.
I think that's exactly right. And I will say, I think for the long videos, I'm so guilty of that. Cause I think with a theater background, I'm like, the show must go on. I'll mess up. I'll just keep going. I don't even edit them. You'll get all the bloopers in the video. Like, oops, don't click there. Let's click over here instead. That'll work a lot better. But then it takes like a super long time.
It makes it really enjoyable to watch the first time. It's just not easy to reference again.
And then the rest is like, oh yeah, that's where she messes up again. Okay, skip. But I do wonder if some of that created the hesitancy of people initially, assuming that that meant that they needed to do the super long video. But I think to your point of, you know, team members pushing back, because we got a lot of that, especially at the beginning of, yeah. You know, like, oh, like I'm just not good at that. It's like, then do it badly. That's fine. Do it badly then. You will get yeah. better at it. Just yes. do it poorly to start.
Yeah.
But you're going to do it anyway. So do it bad. Or, I mean, you know, at some point I'd like you to do it well, but like, just
you
start where you're starting.
You don't start. Yeah,
that's exactly. Right. And yeah. You kind of can't learn if you're so focused on the quality in which you're going to do it. The yes. more that you're thinking about yourself and whether you're sounding weird and whether you look weird and whether you're going to do it right, the more nervous and anxious you will be. If you actually think about, what do I need to do in this video? Okay, I need to show you how to run this process. And if you just focus on what you're there to do, you will stop being so anxious about how well you're doing it. So then you will do it a lot better. So, you know, I gave that input to a team member. We were doing her very first onboarding call with a new client. And she was talking about, you know, being a little bit anxious about it and kind of hesitant. And I'm like, don't think about that. Just focus on what we're here to do. Just focus on building rapport with this client. You want them to feel confident that you've got things handled. So how can you like focus on them and on what they need and on what, you know, the agenda is going to walk them through? Like focus on what you need to do and you won't worry so much about how you feel about it. And she did a fantastic job and then did another one recently and did an even better job because she like was like, oh, now I get what we're doing. You know, so sometimes you do it and you also just sort of get over the fear of doing something you've never done before. And you're like, oh, I just hit record and I screen share and say words out loud of the thing you do. And then I hit stop and I did it.
Yeah,
no one's going to die.
Like, well, and I'll also say like making Loom video processes has been super helpful for people gaining the skills and the confidence to lead meetings with clients like onboarding calls. So if you never go and have to lead anything, including, you know, guiding a process video, it's going to be really hard to jump into an onboarding call. So it's almost like a test run for you. A bunch of times you can get a bunch of reps in where you're the guide. You get to say, this is how this is done. And you get to improve it incrementally across time before you ever have to do that to someone outside of the firm. Everyone else knows, you know what you're doing in the firm who's going to watch this video. So you get all these like really handy, like safe test
runs. It's kind learning.
It's very kind learning so that by the time you have to do this in a situation where it's like, no, I better look like I know what the heck I'm doing. It's like, it's so much easier to tackle that kind of anxiety because you've done this multiple times before at this job, in this role, in different ways. And it just builds that resilience so well for things that you don't even think about or connect to process building. It's such a huge benefit.
Well, and now with brand new team members, we incorporate recording Loom videos into their onboarding process as a requirement. So you are going to get comfortable with this at the door because we're just going to have you do it. So it becomes like no big deal when you actually need to do it for something that's going to live on because you've already done it as a way to solidify what you've learned in each kind of major phase of the onboarding. Hey, I did, you know, the phase where I'm learning about what it looks like to work at a crew, and I'm going to record a Loom video of my takeaways, which is practice recording Loom, cementing the things you just learned. It gives us the input that you did actually, you know, pay attention and like learn something. So it's like really great on our side. And we didn't have to schedule a real-time meeting to do that. You know, it still feels like a connection point. We can record a Loom video back to you with some thoughts and feedback. And so there's still a personal element to it without it, you know, that still functions really well in a remote environment. So I think us realizing that everyone at the company should be responsible for sharing information and creating process then made that like, then they should get comfortable at the door. And if they're not, like, they will hate it here. And so they should do it as soon as possible. So if they hate it enough to want to leave, that might be the best fit. Rather than some kind of, like, later on bait and switch. Like, oh, BT dubs, you're going to have to do this thing that you hate. Actually, you have to record a Spark Hire one-way interview before you even get a real-time interview. You essentially record a Loom video before you ever talk to us. So it's like, this is a skill you're going to get comfortable with now, like long before anyone who lived through this, like, transition at a crew. They had to, like, you know, we kept turning the water up for the frog in the pot. Like, you're just jumping in for our new team members. So, you know, but I think it does make everyone think a little bit more about what they're doing. And when something changes, creating a process video, like it just being so clear in, you know, in meetings or collaboration or in Slack in places where we're like, oh, this thing is changing with this client. Oh, let's collaborate on how to do this. Okay, great. Do it this month. Make sure you understand it. Then record a process video of how to do it. Yeah. Because it will cement that learning in for you of how to do this process. And then a process video exists of how to do what I like to call the weird stuff. anything that's weird for a client, anything that only applies to that client, anything that is slightly done differently for that client, you now don't need that person who knows how to do it to be the one to do it. Because now there is a video that exists so anyone could do it. So someone could be sick. Someone could take a vacation. We could transfer a client to someone else and they know all of the weird stuff for that client. It's been such a great improvement over like me feeling the compulsion to like tell them all the things that I happen to know. Cause at this point I don't even know them, which is great. Mm-hmm. So
yeah,
it's been a good progression, but it took a minute.
It took a long time. And I think just knowing that it'll take a long time and that it will require more than just your effort to do is daunting in some ways, but also it's a little relieving in some ways because it's like, well, I don't have to just feel bad that I'm not doing this all the time. And I don't need to just assume that I ought to be, this is a should, I should be doing this, or I should have already done this. It's a process. It's going to take time and it's not going to all fall on your shoulders. And it, you will have to rely on other people to help you move that forward and move the needle, which makes a big difference for how you feel about it. It's not a project. It is building it into process. And I think, you know, one of the things that you mentioned is when something changes for a client, that's just part of our workflow. You do it once and then you record yourself doing it the second time or the third time if you needed, if it's extra complex and you needed to run it twice. As long as you've got it on the first, you know, few times that you're running that process on the docket to make the process video or to, you know, outline the details of that in the workflow, you know, because it's not all videos. We do have, you know, some PDF visuals that make it really easy to reference specific processes. That's a lot better than a really robust SOP document, like just having a quick PDF visual that kind of outlines a process or just building it into the workflow itself. Like, okay, now we have this different payroll system or we have this different process for, you know, bill pay for this client. So we're going to add those steps into our checklist. And now anyone who has that checklist knows what we need to do. Because if it's not built into the way that you work and into the way that you integrate it, it just gets lost when that person's not available. If that person is sick, if that person's on vacation, or that person doesn't work here anymore, you are retroactively trying to fix something that could have been done when they were learning it in the first place. And it just means like, okay, we don't have to do a whole overhaul. This will be in chunks. This will be something that we accomplish across time. And it'll be something that we continue working on constantly. It will mm-hmm. never be done. It's never over. So I think it's, you know, in some ways that feels like, oh gosh, that sounds terrible. But in other ways, it's a little bit relieving that it's not just going to be something so simple as a one and done project.
Well, and when your team are all contributors to creating the process, to updating the process, to refining things, then that actually doesn't feel like a burden at all. You know, it just feels like a benefit that everyone is equipped to be able to do this. So then when something changes, you can just say, oh, hey, when you do that, you know, can you go ahead and make a process video on it too? And it's no big deal. It's so awesome when you're just like, yeah, can you make that? And what some of our team members have done, which I see a ton of, it makes a lot of sense to me, is record a video the first time you're doing it. Like record it badly, you know, record yourself stumbling through it just so that you, if you do this again a month from now, you might not remember where you clicked and kind of what you did and how you got the report from that third party system or whatever. Record it badly the first time, do it a couple times, and then re-record it to a better one. So at least you kind of have the notes and reference point, and then you've done it a few times and worked out the kinks, and then you re-record to the process video that's going to live on. So like, and that's just something I would have thought of, like, because, you know, once I recorded it, I'm like, it's done. I did it.
Check.
You know, so like having the people doing the things do that too makes so much more sense because it will make sense to a technician. At some point, as you start to grow your firm, and assuming that you want to, you know, grow a firm and grow a team and kind of get out of that day-to-day work, you will start being out of that day-to-day work. And the more that you're, you know, doing planning and vision casting and strategy and that different elevation work, you don't always think like a technician anymore, because it's not the vast majority of the day-to-day work that you're doing. So it's better to have technicians recording videos for technicians than to have you, as you start to lean out of that role, have to try to get back into that mindset to be able to create like a training video for them. So
absolutely,
I think videos has been a huge one. Definitely PDF visuals. I think building things into process and into checklists has been a huge part of things. Like, absolutely, even if you have a training video on how to do something, if there is not a checklist item to do that thing on the cadence that you need to do that, creating the video on how to do it will not remind you to do it.
Yeah,
you
remembering know, so is not a process.
It is not. So, you know, like we talk about, you know, our workflow management solution is what you need to do, you know, so all the checklists should always include things you need to do. And so we've seen that go, you know, sideways in two different ways. One is people will insert a lot of things you need to know into a checklist, which is not helpful because you don't do that thing that you need to know every month. So like, do you check it off? Like, do you not? Like, so that's too much. And that makes checklists that are like way too long and overwhelming. So then that client passes to someone else and they're like, oh, that's like a whole like thing. A whole thing. So, get out of my head.
Sorry.
Yeah, but you know, it feels overwhelming and daunting when you conflate what you need to know and what you need to do. And yes, then likewise, if you put what you need to do into one of those knowledge systems, into, you know, just a process video or into a client doc, but it doesn't make its way into the checklist that you work on every month, you're not going to do that. You're not going to go to what you need to know so that you know what you need to do. So there needs to be clarity around where you track what you need to do and where you access what you need to know, so that people have like the sense of where to go to know what. And so I think, yes, also just clarifying that for people, here's where you go for what you will need to know on, that was not meant to rhyme, but here we are, you know, to do this client or to do our workflows or whatever the thing is, you know, differentiating between knowing and doing is incredibly helpful for new team members in particular, but even for existing team members. I'll see people, you know, make notes about something and it's like, but did you make a task? I do that so much less now because everyone's annoyed enough that they're like, I made a task, you know.
Don't worry, please don't ask me.
Yes, don't ask. I did it. No, it's much more kind than that. But it's, you know, they will like say, hey, I made the process video and I created this task and here's the task that it made. Like, does that look good? And now I don't even see that because it goes to like their lead bookkeeper who's like, hey, here's the task I made. Does that look good for, you know, making sure that I've captured what I need to do to incorporate this new process every month? Is it clear enough that you understand it? Because then that means someone else would understand it. Just kind of all of that point that when you're making process, and this will be something to equip your team, when you're making process, it has to make sense to someone that's not you.
Yes, 100%. Otherwise, it still relies on you being there to make sense of it. And that can't exist. That's not sustainable. That's not functional. And that's not, yes, democratized information.
No, and I've seen so many checklists that I'm like, I bet that made sense to the person who wrote it.
Totally. Does not to me.
I bet they knew exactly what they meant in this, you know. And so one of the projects that we did, I can't remember the timeline, maybe a year or two ago, was have one of our most senior technicians work on creating a standardized monthly checklist format so that here are the things we do for everyone. And then here are the specific places where we house the nuanced things that we only do for this client, so that the structure is the same for all clients and the nuance of the client is in the same place for all clients. And it just created so much clarity, especially for new team members, of there are things I do for everyone. I do most of the same things for everyone. And so you get that through line of what are the things that I'm learning that apply to everyone? And then what are the things that I only do for this client? And every one of those things should have a process video, because if you only do it for this client, then you need to know how to do it. So then there should be a video that shows you how to do it. And just kind of helps to keep the structure so that it doesn't turn into the Wild West, because that is one of the problems that we experience with trying to get more contributors to creating process. It can easily become the Wild West again, because everyone's creating the process in the way that makes sense to them. Yes. So creating the top-down structure and giving guidance for how people can create the nuance inside of the structure that's standardized was so, so helpful for everyone to know, here's the places for, you know, you do you, and most of this is we do this.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that is the key benefit to moving away from something as formal and like extensive as an SOP and into something that's really functional, and being able to ask those questions of like, what is actually needed here? Like, what does the team actually want and need in this in order for us to effectively equip not just this person to work on this client, but all future team members to work on this client? Because the client will be here longer than that team member in theory. If, you know, the average life of an accounting client is about 7 years, the average life of an accounting employee is what, 3 to 5? Like, you're going to have more than one person working on that client. So let's just start with the end in mind. And I think starting with the end in mind is one thing that we've greatly improved in the last 4 years, of being able to really hone in on what is the goal we're trying to accomplish. And let's start with trying to achieve that well. And we can iterate along the way, but we're going to start hard to get to easy, because that I think is one of the biggest, this is a phrase that one of our team members used recently. And I was like, oh yeah, that's exactly how we work. It's going to be harder to set up stuff our way initially. Like, so for example, in an onboarding call with a new client, we're going to want your logins to not be specific to the one individual that's onboarding you as your account manager. We're going to want you to set it up under a standard account that's, you know, codes, our codes account, and the codes phone number, and the standard address that we use for a crew, and the standard, you know, if you need a social security number, this is the number we use for all clients, no matter what, when we're setting up our access, so that if that team member leaves or goes on vacation or gets sick or just transfers that client to a new team member because they're taking on a different role, you have the opportunity to transfer it with almost no friction to the client and having to reset up access for us. Now, you know, that access breaks and, you know, things happen. It's not like we never have to do that. But if we're setting it up in a standardized way, we have to do it so much less often. And it's almost never because of us. It's almost always because the system got updated on the back end, or, you know, some, you know, a bank updated the way that they did something, and now we got to reestablish that connection. And so I think like starting hard so that you can make it easy in the future is such a good way to reframe this, because it is hard. It's hard to do all the things that we're talking about. But when you start with the end in mind, it makes things so much easier in the long run. It was hard to start getting our team to make process. It was hard to start making process ourselves. It was hard to do all of this stuff. But if you're willing to start hard so that it gets easier across time, it makes it feel worth it when you get to the point where you're like, oh my gosh, is this a well-oiled machine? Like, are we doing it? Like, that's so great.
I think we are, which is weird. I mean, it feels weird to look back at how much progress we've made and go, wow, it is a lot easier now than it was when we got started. And actually, I think it, as you're talking about some of the stuff that we've created to make that easier, I think something else we did, we created a structure, like an agenda for recording a client overview video that walks you through, here's the nuance of this client. Here's who the owners are. Here's kind of what my experience of working with them so far has been like. You know, they want me to talk in plain English. They know accounting jargon, or like, oh, they have some finance background, so you can use some of these kinds of words, or like, you know, it has been so easy to work with them. They're really quick to respond to me. It's super pleasant. All those things you kind of take for granted. You just sort of know about a client as you've experienced them. Having a structure to record that as a video that walks, that anyone working with that client has that kind of context that normally you have to like schedule a meeting to talk about if you're going to move a client, and you need to like prime that person taking them on with all the stuff about this client. Like, you could just put all of that into a video. And then if the person working on that client, you know, suddenly left or like got sick and needed to take a leave of absence or like whatever happened, you're not, that knowledge isn't leaving with them. It's there for everyone to experience. So that one I think has been super helpful in it, and the work that we've done on the client doc, particularly one of our team members who made it so pretty and functional and structured well and like easy to update. Like, it's not cumbersome to make any changes there. It's like, it's so like, who gets excited about a client doc? I don't know. That's what happens when you have other people contribute to process that are really good at it.
Yeah.
So like that, to be able to have places where you can put things like, how do you build trust with this client? Here's what they really care about. Here's what they value. Now, obviously, being a client experience focused firm, we're going to care about that a lot more. But like, how do you prevent problems with this client? I feel like any firm should care about that, because having unnecessary problems wastes time and energy and effort. So it doesn't even have to be so lofty as like, how can you make it an enjoyable experience to work with us? You could just go like, here's what they don't like. Don't do that. You know, we learned, don't do that one, you know?
Yeah.
So having that to pass along. And I think also that the client docs we've created are like a great example of, everyone should contribute to process. Not everyone will be good at making process that should be used company-wide. That's not the same thing. Everyone should be able to say, for this client that I do, here's how you record their payroll journal entry, you know, or for this client that I do, here's how you log in to that other site and pull this report to record this journal entry that records their sales every month. Like, anyone that's technical on the team should be able to do that. Anyone in operations should be able to be like, here's how you, you know, set up the new templates when we onboard a new employee and create a process video for that. You know, but when you start talking about, we're going to create a checklist that we use for all clients, you know, or we're going to create a client doc template and structure that we use for all clients, that's not going to be everybody. It doesn't need to be you, but it's not going to be everybody who has that skill set.
Yeah.
How do we figure out who can contribute to those bigger company-wide process projects?
Well, I think it starts with just acknowledging that the people who are really good at those things aren't necessarily the people who are good at building the scaffolding for those things. So like, just because someone is a great, you know, lead bookkeeper and like QA is really awesome and can review books and pull reports excellently and give, you know, feedback to team members, doesn't mean that their brain can conceptualize the idea of how to share, how to break out information in different ways. And so, you know, starting with like, just because you're good at this doesn't mean that this is the thing you should do. And so, oddly enough, the person who ended up improving our client docs drastically, there were quite a few contributors, but one of them was an operations person. She's not an accountant at all. So you don't have to be a technician to be excellent at building process, and not all technicians are good at building process. So starting there, I think, is really important and worth noting a couple times, because I think the assumption is typically, you know, my most senior and most experienced person should be managing the team, or my most senior and experienced person should be building process. Not necessarily. That person might be able to contribute to that and should definitely speak into it. So, you know, our operations person who, you know, kind of reworked these documents elicited input from some of our more senior people and from our more senior account managers too, like from the client side, like what's the most important information? What would you want to know when taking on a new client from the previous person? Or when you're onboarding a new client, what would you need to know? So I think just starting there, like just being really realistic about that is just too important not to say again, because it's so easy to just assume that because you're good at doing a thing, you're good at building the scaffolding for that thing. And that's just not true. So one of the things I really like that we do is we'll test this. Like we will give an opportunity to contribute to something like a project like this or build, you know, building this checklist and kind of see how you do. And if you do really well and you're really good at taking the feedback that we have for it, if you're really good at like thinking about things in a much more, 10,000 foot view way, then we'll probably give you more opportunities. And if you're not, we'll probably ask you for input when we're ready for that input. And we have more specific questions for you, more, you know, pointed questions that are like, okay, between these three options, which one makes the most sense to you? But yeah, I think just testing it out with people and thinking about what is the goal we're trying to accomplish here and who makes sense to kind of synthesize that information, because odds are good it's not the person who does that job every day, but they're going to have a lot to say about how we do that.
Yeah, I think that's right, and that it shouldn't be defined by role. It should be defined by skill set. So we have had very early on team members who, you know, are barely out of their intro period, if even out of their intro period, mm-hmm. and effectively contributing to creating process because they're just good at it. Yeah. You know, and we've had people who've been here for a super long time. And it's like, you can speak into the process that we will create and we want your input and feedback. But there are people that do really well with a blank whiteboard. And there are people that is incredibly stressful for, but they can meaningfully contribute if you put some stuff on it and they're like, oh, I think this one and this one, not that one.
Yeah.
And so it's not mean to try to figure out where team members can best contribute. And it is not inappropriate to grab the best person who can best contribute over someone who might have more seniority or might have more experience or might, you know, by role make sense to be that person. We've had the flip side of we've had operational people who are not good at creating process in operations. It's like, oh, you made this checklist. It's bad. Like, and and like, you know, it's, I don't want to be a jerk about it, but like, not this, you know, and the goal, you know, is we want to get to that best idea. We want to get to the best process. We want to get to something that's usable and functional. And if we're going to ask team members to spend their time and effort and energy on something and then not use it because it's bad, like they're not going to feel good about that. So like, let's make sure that we're giving some opportunities and seeing if it's the right skill set so that if we give more opportunities, you're going to contribute something we use and everyone gets to feel good about that rather than trying to be nice about it and let people do stuff because it seems like they really want to or they're excited about it. And it's like, cool, I love the enthusiasm. I want something good at the end and I don't want to have to dance around that. So like if you can contribute something meaningful and take the feedback and be on board that the best idea is going to win and it doesn't matter where it came from, like that's awesome. And if not, like let's focus you somewhere else. You know, let's just not do that.
And I think it's a really tempting thing to want everyone to contribute to something like this. And that's not quite right either, because then you just have a lot of voices in the room that need a lot of discernment and you're not going to be able to pick all of them. So being really intentional about who's the best person to start building this scaffolding, who are the best people to contribute to fleshing that out, and then who should we just make sure, like, thumbs up, this is good, like, this works for you, like, poke holes if you see them, but, like, we didn't need your input to make this thing great, and you're probably thrilled to not contribute to that, but I think a lot of firms will tend toward, well, let's get everyone's input, and that is nice, not kind. That is not about the best idea winning. That is about making everyone feel good and feel like they contributed. But it's also assuming that you know what's going to make people feel good. We have plenty of team members who like are happy to not contribute to building process because they just want to kind of crank out their work and do the thing. And they'll build the process when they run a process, their client-specific stuff, the things that they're responsible for as the team member on that client. But they're not going to participate in building a new client doc. They're not going to participate in building a standardized checklist. And that's right. We don't have to include everyone for everyone to feel important. Everyone should feel important because they're contributing something meaningful to a project. And that ultimately is up to us to be able to see and know our team really well, to be able to suss out like what are you really good at? What are you really passionate about? Because odds are good, what you're passionate about is likely going to align to some extent with what you're good at. And how can we leverage those skills well, so that we're ending up at the right place and you're not going to contribute to everything because then we're just going to have a ton of decision fatigue. We're going to have to try to figure out if we need to be nice and just use all the ideas or if we need to like think through like, how do we tell this person we didn't want this, like that this isn't the direction we went. And I think our team is really good at contributing ideas. I mean, today is a great example. We had our quarterly account manager meeting, talked about year end and how we can improve it for next year so that we can start working on that sooner than later. And they had some great ideas. And there are a few that I'm probably not going to do. And I think they're all cool with that, but they're all going to share their ideas. And that room is full of people who are actually impacted by the things that we're going to change. I'm not going to invite people who don't have that role to that meeting just to make them feel special. I'm only going to invite people to that meeting who are going to contribute to how we can do this effectively. And that's right. And it's not nice, it's kind. And I think it's really important to think really critically about the best people coming to the table, not because they're so good at doing the job, but because they're the right kinds of people to contribute in the way that you've asked them to.
That's exactly right. That is it's not leading by consensus.
Yes.
That's not exactly effective leadership. I don't actually need everyone to individually agree to this thing. We want the right people in the room to discern and to decide. And we do want people to, you know, tell us what they think about it. You know, we do want people's thoughts and ideas, but there are times where inviting people into the room is actually more stressful for them than it is helpful for them.
Definitely.
Like when we're trying to be nice and including people at the wrong times or just the wrong people for what we're trying to do, a lot of times they'll try to be nice and say yes to it because they think that we want them to do that. And
or so we need them to.
We're all doing a thing that doesn't make sense because no one wants to just say like, hey, why don't we grab these three people that we really need their way in and buy in on this. And then we'll let the rest of the team know what we decided, you know? Mm-hmm. So like it's interesting to talk about that in this particular context, but process is something that will continue to live on. It's something you don't want to have to redo all the time. So getting some of those structures right, rather than, you know, getting everyone to agree, waiting until no one has any input on anything, it's like, then you won't have any process.
That's so, a fantasy world. Yeah.
Yes. And I think what we've done well is giving people an opportunity and seeing what they do and then giving more opportunities based on demonstrated skill set. That doesn't mean that person isn't going to get more opportunities in general if they mm-hmm. don't have that particular skill set. They just probably won't get more opportunities in a skill set they don't have proficiency in because no one's really going to enjoy that. Either, mm-hmm. you know, they're slogging through work that they know that they're not really good at, or possibly worse, they think they are good at it and you have to like, you know, kill that dream. Like, let's just start small. Let's not offer the forever opportunity of doing this. Let's offer like low stakes, like, hey, could you contribute this particular process? Or can you give me the first draft of this? Or can mm-hmm. you take a stab at this and let's see what we do? And like just under promise some of this
yeah.
until you kind of see and suss out. And then you'll sort of know, hey, this is going to be a great project for this person because they've demonstrated they're great at doing these kinds of projects. And then it becomes really easy and simple. But as you're getting started, low stakes opportunities to try something and see without promising any future opportunities in that area will really save everyone's feelings. If you're like, yeah, they might be great at this. Oh, they were not. And there are plenty of things I'm not great at, and I try to be aware of them. And sometimes other people will tell me that is the thing you weren't great at, you know, so sometimes I don't always know, you know, this isn't any kind of value judgment of those people. It's just, what are we trying to accomplish and who's the best person to be able to do that?
Absolutely.
And the goal of building the process, the goal of having Loom videos, the goal of having client decks, like all of these things, the goal is we want what you need to know so that you can be successful in what you need to do to be accessible to everyone who needs to access it, you know, so that we've done everything we can to set them up for success, so that someone isn't like, how could I have known to do this? Or how could I have known that we shouldn't say this to this client? Or like, we just recently had a client say, hey, you know, this person who I'm pretty sure it was their spouse, is no longer on this business. So do not include them in communication anymore. If you didn't update that process, and then we keep sent, because I don't know the backstory there. I don't need to know.
I don't need to know. But I would prefer not to.
I kind of don't want to know the story. Like, I don't want to be part of it. I wish you well, you know, but like, if we don't have a way of ensuring we're updating who the approved contacts are, we could be continuing to send stuff and then cause a lot of really unnecessary friction because they said, hey, could you not do that? Like, you should only need to ask that once. Yes. And we should have systems and processes that ensure that that doesn't happen. You know, that's really the goal, is like, we want everyone to be set up with the knowledge that they need to be successful.
Yeah, absolutely. I think some of the questions that you can ask yourself as you're trying to get to these places are, is it accessible to the right person and the right people, like right now and in the future? Like, is there a way for us to kind of shortcut that for the future as well? Does it contain the right kind of information for us? Is all the stuff you need to know in the right place? Is all the stuff you need to do in the right place? Is it clear that those are different? All of that. Is it laid out effectively and clearly? I think that is one of the biggest learning curves here. You will do it wrong or hard or over-engineered more than once. So like, just get used to having to undo that or to redo that. But is it laid out in a way that's actually clear, that's effective, that is easily accessible, that someone's actually going to reference, because that's kind of the point? And then, is it sustainable? Can we keep this current? Is this something that we can actually commit to maintaining across time? And do we have process for how we do that, even how we maintain it? So I think those are such good starting points for figuring out, like, okay, what do we actually need to do here? And what are we trying to accomplish?
Yeah, I totally agree. And where you house that will be different depending on your firm. You know, if you have a task management system or a client management system where you can house all of that in one place, like, that's awesome. You know, maybe you house it there, you house everything you can there, and then there's links to other places. So like for us, because we use Loom to record all the videos, in the place where we, you know, track the tasks we need to do, we may have links to those videos, or we have links to the folder where all of those videos live for that particular client. We did a ton of work to reorganize Loom so that it was clear where stuff for a client lives that is processed, where stuff lives that maybe is kind of like back and forth questions while we're shoring something up, but isn't actually the current process that you should go do. Because sometimes, you know, we may be in flux. We may be figuring it out. We want to differentiate between here is the set process you should go do versus here is the stuff we're kind of figuring out versus here are some videos we made to share with the client. And those ones are actually client facing and we save them here. So like, where you decide to house these things may be different just depending on the structure that you kind of have set up. But you'll want to think about, you know, how can I make it as easy as possible for everyone to access whatever they need to for that particular client, for that particular role, you know, whatever it is. Like, we don't want to make it unnecessarily hard to know and do the things that we want our team to know and do. And then how can we continue to keep that up? You know, how can we revisit that both, you know, individually, like, hey, does this client have the most particular process? Is this process out of date now? But also sort of company-wide, hey, is this still the structure that we want things, you know, or like those client docs, like, hey, you know, every 6 months or once a year or however often, like, just kind of do a review of it to go like, does this all still make sense? Like, is this all still current? You know, because we may update individual isolated things in real time, but sometimes it's good to take a step back and go, does this accurately reflect that what it still looks like to work with this client, you know, or what it still looks like, what all we still need to do for this client? Like, has anything else changed that maybe we just happened to miss in those real-time updates, and we want to make sure it's captured because we're doing kind of some regular reviews of that. Like, or like you mentioned, you know, we met with account managers, we've met with other team members as well for like, what can we do to make year-end more streamlined? How can we make that more sustainable? Some of the stuff we really worked on is like, how can we make sure the resources you'll need for year-end are in the most obvious place possible during the season of year-end, so that it's super easy for you to find what you need and not go, where does that email template live for when this thing happens? Like, just the most obvious place is where it lives, because we want to make that easy. So, you know, we still want to be keeping in mind that, like, we're not done, but yeah. Like, it's come a long way, and because it has, it is all so much more sustainable. Like, yes. when we move a client to another team member, it's kind of no big deal, because there's a process to do that, because there's a process for that team member to look at that client and make sure it's all current. There's a process for the team member receiving them to get it. There's an email template to introduce the new person. There's a template to make the video that introduces you as your new account manager. Like, there are so many things that we've built so that now when we do the things that we just need to do, it's so much easier. But it was a lot to get there.
Yeah. And we're still always going to iterate. If this is a finish line for you, it's going to be really challenging, because you're just going to keep having this project every few years. And we have just completely reframed it as, this is a process. You know, like, we are still working on a lot of this stuff. We're still figuring out when a client transfers. Yeah, the process is super easy, but how do we budget time for that? You know, like, there's still stuff that we haven't totally ironed out and figured out. And so imagining this as not just a project, but as a process, is really helpful for just feeling like, okay, like, we're doing this better every single day than we did the day before, every single year than we did the year before. And that's the goal. The goal is not to finish it. The goal is to keep it sustainable and to keep it functional. And ultimately, it's just too important to ensure that key information is democratized, that it's shareable, that it's searchable, and that it's easily referenced by your team. And that really starts by storing and maintaining and sharing it with the right people. And when you think with the end in mind, and the end being not a destination but a journey, it will really equip your team to be self-sufficient and enable your firm to be so much more sustainable in the long term. Thanks for joining us. We hope you'll keep tuning in as we share how we are building a firm worth building. It's going to be good.